Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. We are still very much coming down from the high that was the exhilarating PGA Championship. Rex, now that you've had a few days to reflect, all the postscripts are coming out. What has stood out to you in the aftermath of Xander Schauffele's victory at Valhalla?
How psychologically brilliant it was over the course of the final nine. Because you start to think about where was his headspace coming into this week after what happened at the Wells Fargo, where, of course, he was dominant on Thursday, held the lead going into Sunday, and then just essentially gets ran off the map by Rory McIlroy on Sunday to lose that title. And now, fast forward to the very next Sunday, and you get to the 10th hole, the second easiest hole on the golf course that day, and you bogey it. And I can only imagine the things that are racing through Xander's mind. Like, it's happening again, and I can't believe I'm going to do this again. And he goes birdie, birdie, and essentially doesn't separate himself, but finishes the way you need to finish to win a major championship. It's a study in psychological strength that I think is really cool.
So you wrote Bryson on Sunday night. I wrote Xander Schauffele. And obviously, when you've been in this position, when you were writing about the winner, it's sort of this mad scramble after the final putt drops, trying to grab any and everyone who can contribute to the narrative that is going to be Xander Schauffele wins his first major championship. So I went down the line. I got Chris Como. I got Xander's caddy, Austin Kaiser. I got Xander's wife, Maya, who was wonderful as well. But I couldn't help but notice, Rex, that one noticeable absence in the aftermath of Xander's victory was his father, Stefan, who has been omnipresent at tournaments ever since Xander burst on the scene back in 2017. Stefan is kind of this larger-than-life figure. You know, he's known for strutting around golf courses in linen shirts and straw hats, and he occasionally will have a cigar. And Xander said that his father was actually in Hawaii helping build the family compound, but unlike the Players' Championship, where Xander had a chance to win, where I believe his father flew in on that Sunday, thinking that was potentially going to be one of his crowning achievements. I don't think you could help but feel, Rex, a little bit melancholy. When you zoom out of the situation, Xander's 30 years old now. He's finally moved away from his lifelong coach. He's kind of been given his space to be his own man, moving away from under his dad. And Xander talks Sunday about how his dad always knew there'd come a time in his life and his career where to access that next level, he was going to need someone else. And that someone else has turned out to be Chris Como, with whom Xander began working last fall. And now that he did move away from his dad, now that he has accessed that next level, I'm sure you can relate a little bit, being of a certain age and having sons who are trying to get out of the house and carve their own path and their own legacy. What did you make of that whole situation? Because it was a little bit melancholy to me.
Tell me what that's like when the kids leave the house and they launch fully. I'll let you know what that's like when I get there.
In theory,
as I sit in a very hot, crowded house at the moment because the AC is broke. It was interesting to me for the reasons you pointed out, because the ogre, which is what they lovingly call him, is always there. He was there when Xander won the Olympic gold medal, even though he wasn't supposed to be because of COVID. He was there when Xander won last year at the Scottish Open when I was there. I mean, he is just sort of this omnipresent figure. And you wonder at how – I'm sure it was difficult for Xander. I'm sure it was very emotional. He talked about talking to his dad on the phone in the immediate aftermath and literally having to hang up. Like, my dad started crying, and then I realized I'm going to start crying. And, okay, we need to clean this up. Like, I can't do this right now. Let's do this later, because I can't walk into the media center with tears rolling down my face. I would look at it more from Stefan's point of view, from a father's point of view. And we see it on tour all the time. And I'm not going to name names. You guys can figure out who the players are, who their dads always seem to be omnipresent. And it seems to me that it's a difficult line to walk, because I'm sure the son wants him there. If not, the father clearly wouldn't be there. But at some point you do need to launch fully, whatever that happens to be. And in this particular case, it's a very, very like hard line where Xander decided, okay, I need to move on to something else, because he's only been working with Como less than a year now, correct? I mean, I'm not quite sure what the
since last fall.
So it's not as though that this has been going on for a very, very long time. So I get it from Xander's point of view. I'm going to look at it from the father's point of view, and I'm sure it was tough for Stefan not to be there. I'm sure he did toy with the idea of getting on a plane and flying all the way to Louisville from Hawaii. And I think there's a level of appreciation that Xander probably has for his dad now, because I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, I'm going to walk away, I'm going to let my son live his life. It's another thing to actually do it in that situation.
And Chris Como has been very careful to point out that he's still very much in collaboration with Stephon on any sort of swing coach. He's explained or any swing change. He's explained exactly what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it. He called it more of a collaborative process. It is an amazing story that Stephon, who was a former aspiring Olympic decathlete, who had no formal training in the game, helped develop a player who was, by all accounts, an above average junior player, sort of a top 25, top 50 college player, who has now become a major champion. I think everyone would agree, a top caliber, top five player in the world now, and now a major champion. It's a great story. And I do believe that Stephon will eventually be reincorporated. And I think it's not a stretch to say that he's probably been put in timeout following the Ryder Cup issues that we had last year, where Xander and Cantlay reportedly refused to sign the waiver, and Stephon kind of bickered at the fact that they weren't being paid. It was a whole messy situation. But I do think it's notable that in this year of growth for Xander Schauffele, who is now 30 years old and has branched out with his new swing coach, I did think that was a notable thing that came up on Sunday night that we did not talk about on the previous podcast, but I do think it was very interesting to discuss. One other thing, Rex, as it related to Xander Schauffele, was Jordan Spieth talked to reporters on Wednesday, who said obviously he was not surprised at all that Xander Schauffele went on to win a major championship. His record speaks for itself. 6 top five finishes in major championships previously, 12 top 10 finishes. But one thing, Rex, that Spieth is probably Spieth only can do, he pointed out how everyone on tour goes and works out before the round. Like, that's become the new customary thing. You go and you get loose. Somewhat famously now, that is exactly what Scottie Scheffler was doing last Friday, 3 or 4 hours early before his tee time when he got stopped by police. We'll get into that in a second. But he noticed that Xander was working out on the back end, where Thursday, Friday, Saturday, after a five and a half hour round, typically in the heat, it's very slow. He plays great golf. He's the one who's going in and doing the speed training after the round. And Spieth said that has kind of been one very small, subtle thing that he's noticed that kind of has gone along with Xander's transformation over the past 5 or 6 months. What do you think, in hindsight now, was the biggest key to unlocking Xander's greatness?
And to be clear, workout after the round or even before the round it's relative. So for you and I, they probably look like very strenuous workouts. For professional athletes, it's probably on the light side of what they normally do when they're home, to be clear. What stood out to me is, per
Spieth, quote, heavy workout with goal in mind that he would gain a slight advantage. Heavy workout.
And he did. So this goes to the idea, and I think I talked about this on Friday's Live From with Todd Lewis. He picked up 10 mile an hour of golf ball speed, from last year to this year. That's no little jump for a professional. Now, you and I could probably do that with a little bit of training and a little bit of fitting and whatever the case may be. Thank you very much, Tylus, for all you do for us. However, for a professional, that's a huge leap. I mean, that's monumental to pick up 10 miles an hour. And when I talked to Como about it, it's like, well, he can cruise now at about 188 ball speed. And he goes, he can get to 190, 192 when he has to. And I think it's a combination of things. One, the way Como described it is the swing is just more efficient now. So I think that's part of it. But the other side of this, and to your point, is he has gotten stronger. And it's a decision that these players have made. I think Scottie Scheffler probably went down a very similar route. You could probably speak to this better, having covered him in college and the transition he has made to a pro. You've said numerous times that you didn't see this coming. You thought he was going to be a really good PGA Tour player, but not what he's become. And I think in both these cases, it's a very vivid example of what players can do if they decide to go down the road of just not getting stronger, but doing it in a smart way. Do the speed training. We've all heard the Matt Fitzpatrick story, that he went from very much a middle of the road player when it came to driving distance to someone that was in the upper third on the PGA Tour. And I don't think that was a coincidence that as soon as he did that, he won a major championship. The modern game is pretty clear about what the one thing you absolutely have to do well to be able to sustain long term, sort of that level, to stay in that top third, is you have to hit it a long ways. And then you sort of go from there, and you have to go with your wedges and go with your short game, whatever the case may be. But it starts with a long game that it, you're not going to be out driving Bryson DeChambeau. But if you look at where Xander is now, he's very clearly in that upper third. I don't think that can be dismissed. And it's been a very conscious effort.
Yeah, I think you absolutely nailed that. When Chris Como and Xander Schauffele first began working together last fall, the centerpiece of their entire project was, how do we become a better, longer driver of the golf ball? To hear Como tell it, that was sort of the centerpiece from which they were working. That if you look at the world rankings, if you look at the players who are most consistently in major contention, you have to hit the ball longer. To do that, they needed to increase the ball speed and the swing speed. It's a very minute change. And I think this goes to show just how small the margins are on the PGA Tour, and particularly the top levels in the major championships, where if they're talking about a 5 mile an hour increase in ball speed, that's probably a shot per round, where you can either get more aggressive on a dog leg, you can carry a bunker, you can fly it over a tree, you can take one less club into a green to stop the ball closer to the pin. Like, these are very, very minute changes. And when you look at Xander Schauffele, he didn't go into sort of the cartoonish elements of speed training. He wasn't like Bryson DeChambeau, who would be on the tournament practice area at Augusta National, like swinging grunting as hard as he possibly can. Remember back in 2020, 2021, like Vijay Singh was staying next to Bryson. He was literally laughing seeing what Bryson was doing through, what was going through. When you talk about these workouts that Spieth talked about, these quote unquote heavy workouts, where Xander is so heavily dedicated to speed training, he's not all of a sudden looking like Brooks Koepka, you know, squeezing into a medium shirt. He looks, by all accounts, the exact same as he did a year ago, but he's just a little bit more explosive. He has those fast switch muscle fibers that have allowed him now to swing the golf club faster and thus hit it further. I found that very interesting, but I also love that Spieth picked up on that while looking at Xander Schauffele's notable rise in the world. How about update? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think other players are going to do that. I mean, look, Tiger Woods being the example here, that if you played during that era when Tiger Woods was dominant, everyone was watching you in the world, but particularly every tour player was watching you, because they were trying to figure out whatever it is Tiger Woods is doing. That seems like a good avenue to go down, considering how he performed, how he played. I think Xander and Scotty, to a certain example, is the exact same of that. Just to quantify this, so last year, Xander Schauffele was 34th. On tour in ball speed, 179 mile per hour average. And to be clear, these numbers need to be taken with a grain of salt. That these are not, the radar data on tour is not as scientific or perfect as they would like it to be. However, this year he's 10th on tour with 183 mile an hour ball speed. That's a huge jump for a player of that caliber.
And keep in mind, I think there was a boost with speed training, particularly in 2021. Right after Bryson DeChambeau did what he did at Wingfoot, it looked like this was going to be the future. Several players, whether it was Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Tony Finau, Rory McIlroy even admitted to chasing speed and chasing distance in the aftermath of Bryson doing what he did at Wingfoot. It is very difficult to chase speed while not losing your week-to-week consistency, as well as the other aspects of your game. Xander Schauffele's short game and putting are as good as they've been throughout his entire career. His approach play has actually gotten a little bit better. It's worth sort of appreciating Xander Schauffele's greatness, even at a 30,000 foot view, because it's very easy to get sidetracked. And Jordan Spieth was one of those who chased it and ultimately came up a little bit fruitless. One player besides Spieth who is in the Charles Schwab Challenge this week is Scottie Scheffler, able to sleep in his own bed as a Dell resident. Tournament, of course, being played in Fort Worth. Rex, an update on the legal front. I know you've been looking forward to this all week to get into Scottie Scheffler's arraignment that was scheduled for Tuesday, May 21st, yesterday. We're recording this podcast on Wednesday, has since been postponed until June 3rd. That is the Monday of Memorial Week. Also, golf's longest day. Tune into Golf Channel for more reports. He is now expected to have to appear for that, I do believe. Scotty is facing four charges stemming from his morning arrest before his second round of the PGA Championship. The most serious, as we talked about in this podcast, is the charge of a second degree assault of a police officer, which is a felony and could carry as much as 10 years in prison. Louisville mayor said earlier this week the department will investigate the actions of the arresting officer, including why he did not have his body cam on, which apparently was a direct violation of department policy. What's your read on this with all things Scottie Scheffler?
Well, I spoke with his attorney yesterday just about the idea. I'm sorry, on Monday, just about the idea of Steve Romine's of the hearing getting postponed till June 3rd. And he wouldn't speculate on what he thinks might happen. I think his line to me is he's been doing this for two plus decades now. And he goes, I've seen everything in a court when it comes to a criminal case. And he goes, I'm not going to speculate. However, he did want to go out and say on the record that there had been reports over the weekend at Valhalla that the charges were going to be dropped outright. And he said, those are absolutely not true. And so he knows that whatever is going to happen, that it's still a very, very serious situation. As you pointed out, this is a felony. And so I think Scotty, and we will have to be there for that hearing. As you pointed out, it's June 3rd. That's the Monday of Memorial. So assuming Scotty doesn't play the Canadian Open, he's not in the field right now, I wouldn't imagine he's going to add that to his schedule. He'll have to go to Louisville on his way essentially to Jack's Place to sit in on that hearing. I will say that the next day when the mayor came out and the police department, the Metro Louisville Police Department, released a statement that they're reviewing protocols. And this has everything, as you said, to do with the body cam. The body camera was not turned on for Detective Brian Gillis. That's a detective that made the arrest. That's a detective who was injured, according to the police report, when Scottie Scheffler did not heed his warnings and somehow he got dragged. So we still have to find out exactly what happened here. The department policy is if you were doing anything police-related duties, you need to have the camera on. So that's going to be a major sticking point, and it's probably going to be ultimately decided if this case goes forward or not.
Wouldn't a cynic, Rex, point out that the charges being dropped on Monday or Tuesday, and his arraignment was initially scheduled for Tuesday, that would have been, I think, a huge turnoff for Louisville residents if Scottie Scheffler's charges were ultimately dismissed, you know, one business day after the fact. Now that we're going to have roughly 2 weeks until his next hearing, what do you actually anticipate happening with that next hearing that's scheduled for now June 3rd?
I would expect his charges to get dropped. Again, it's a criminal case. You have no idea how this is going to go down. To your point, though, absolutely. It not only would it have sent a really bad message to the rest of the community, but you'd already sent a really bad message, because when it just so turns out that he got arrested at the exact perfect time. If you're going to get arrested, apparently, in Louisville, Kentucky, that 7 a.m. time frame is the time to do it, because that's when everybody is in position at the Department of Corrections to process him through quickly. And he was there. He was actually in a cell for less than an hour. It's safe to say that anyone who has been processed through that same department will tell you it takes a lot longer than less than an hour. And so already it has this perception that they were giving the golfer special treatment, the professional golfer special treatment. And maybe they were. I mean, I can't speak to that at all. But if they were, just 2 days later to drop the charges and say, you know, no foul, this is on us, that would have sent such a terrible message. So my guess is they're trying to give it some space, let it air out a little bit, and then sometime before June 3rd, they'll decide to drop the charges, because it doesn't look like it's a very good case.
I also can't help but think, Rex, if ESPN's Jeff Darlington, who is the reporter who saw this incident unfold, if he did not report it live on ESPN, if he did not release the video on Twitter or X showing the confrontation between the arresting officer, Scottie Scheffler, and then Jeff Darlington, if that did not come out, if Jeff Darlington was not there, what happens? I am convinced if Jeff Darlington is not there, then Scottie Scheffler misses his tee time, gets disqualified, and misses out on an opportunity to win single season slam. Because it would have taken hours, plural, for the news to trickle out that Scottie Scheffler was arrested and was then in a holding cell. The fact that it was broadcast on ESPN within the hour, I think, sort of mushroomed this out of control. It's why the mayor got involved so quickly, and I think why he was processed so quickly once the police department realized the magnitude of what was going on there. To me, it's like a great, like, what if barroom debate. Like, if Jeff Darlington was not there, what happens to the story?
You are great at doing those where you just throw it out. Absolutely, 100%. There's no way he gets out, because there's no way for you to get proven wrong. So it's you at your best where you're going to go ahead and I'm going to put my flag right here, because there's no way anyone's ever going
to
come back
to me. You just said a Louisville resident would absolutely not be processed as quickly
As, I would as not was. Imagine that's going to
this,
happen.
This for sure. When his tee time was what, 10:10?
You keep throwing the for sure Eastern out there. Time.
I mean, it's amazing to think what could have happened had Jeff Darlington not been there to document the arrest. I think it's reasonable to expect that Scottie Scheffler would then have missed his tee time and gotten disqualified from the PGA Championship had he not been there.
Okay, now you've quantified it with it's reasonable to expect. I'll go down that road. Yeah,
come on.
I'll go down that road with you. 100%. I'm going to go ahead and shy away from. But you're right. If it doesn't end up being splashed all over ESPN, and let's be perfectly clear about this, they handled this story really well. Jeff Darlington handled this story really well. I told him that afternoon, like, man, you made all of us proud who do this for a living. That was an amazing way of doing this. And to be honest with you, it caused me to sort of think about in my own mind, like, what would I have done if I'd have been sitting in that van? I'm sure I would have gotten out of the van. I don't know that I would have had the presence of mind to take my phone out. And then
because you're old.
Probably. And then once Scottie Scheffler asked me for help, then you start spiraling. Then I'm like, well, we're supposed to not become part of the story, but this poor guy clearly needed some help. You're right. If it doesn't get splashed all over ESPN, if the mayor doesn't wake up with this just staring him in the face, and the governor also got involved of Kentucky, yes, there is a really, really good chance that he is in jail at least for another hour. And that's all it would have taken, because he got to the golf course a little under an hour before his tee time, if I remember correctly. All it took was one more hour, which is not a lot of time when you're getting processed in and out of the system. So it wouldn't have taken much for this to get, I don't want to say swept under the rug, but not moved along as quickly as it clearly was.
And like Scottie Scheffler has to be considered a prohibitive favorite once again for the U.S. Open, having just been to Pinehurst. Like, that golf course and the way that distance control and iron play are going to be either rewarded or penalized, depending on whether it's good or poor. Like, yeah. If he wins the U.S. Open and his single season slam pursuit is derailed because Detective Brian Gillis, oh my God, I can't wait to see some of the think pieces that arise from that. Before we wrap up, Rex, this midweek edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav, did want to touch on this story in which the New York Times reported that a deal between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund is still, quote, very much alive, according to sources. In fact, in recent days, the PGA Tour and Saudi PIF exchanged term sheets that would see the Saudis inject $1.5 billion into the tour's new for-profit arm, which is called PGA Tour Enterprises. That would, of course, that $1.5 billion matched the initial investment by a consortium of U.S. sports moguls earlier this year. That also, Rex, follows the news that kind of went under the radar on Sunday night that a second independent director, Mark Flaherty, has resigned from the PGA Tour Policy Board following the recent departure as well of Jimmy Dunn. That is something that we did not touch on the podcast on Sunday night. Rory already had low confidence that a deal could get done when he talked to reporters last week at Valhalla. Now this, what the heck is going on here?
What are you talking about? I broke that story on Sunday night. How did it go under the radar when I broke it?
We didn't talk about it on the podcast. And that news coming out at 8 p.m. Eastern time after Xander Schauffele just wins a thrilling PGA championship. Yes, that is going under the radar. That is the definition of a late Sunday news dump if you're the PGA Tour.
No, I'm not going to concede that. I wrote the story. I put it out on X, so I don't think it was under the radar, at least as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to go ahead and break my arm, patting myself on the back. It didn't go under this radar, I guess is the way I would put it. Not surprised that another policy board, and look, this is the policy board of the PGA Tour. This is not the Enterprises board of directors. You need to make that distinction real clear. And I would expect he's not going to be the last one. Ed Hurley is also still on the PGA Tour policy board. He was also one of the architects of the framework agreement along with Jimmy Dunn. I would expect Ed's going to step down sooner rather than later, because the PGA Tour policy board doesn't have a lot to do now with the future of what professional golf is going to look like. That decision will be made by the board of directors of the new enterprise entity. And those three specifically, Jimmy Dunn, Mark Flaherty, were not pulled over like a lot of the other independent directors. So the idea being, why? Like, they weren't doing anything that was really worthwhile on the PGA Tour policy board. So I get it. I will say that and you and I talked about this before we fired up the podcast, that I'd received a call that there was an emergency policy board meeting yesterday, lasted about 3 hours. and that Jay Monahan is at Colonial this week for the Charles Schwab Challenge. He's talking with a lot of players. There's a lot of whispering going on. So it seems like something is happening, and it may very well be that there is a deal on the table. Now, that doesn't mean that we'll have some sort of conclusion anytime soon. I'm sure at this point there's still a lot of the details to be worked out, but that's a good step when you consider that. Go back to last week. I mean, I think Seth Waugh probably spoke the wisest on this from his position as the CEO of the PGA of America. It's just bad for the entire game now, not just for professional golf, but it's filtering down. It's impacting every level of the game, this disunity, this split, this constant distraction, the bitterness, the icky parts of all of it is just not good for golf. And there has to be some sort of solution. And I had a conversation with Seth about this last week. And the idea is he can imagine a world where there is some sort of deal and the live players come back, whatever that means. And you have the two sides come together, whatever that means. I don't know what that looks like, but I can think that through. You give me enough time, I can give you a formula. I can tell you, okay, this is the blueprint for where the game's going forward. If there is no deal, I can't give you that blueprint. I can't tell you what it would possibly look like because it's not a sustainable product.
So you did not read this most recent news development, Rex, as sort of an indictment of Jay Monahan's future, where all of a sudden he is losing his allies left and right, whether it's Jimmy Dunn, whether it's Mark Flaherty, now, as you say, potentially Ed Hurley. That's not your read on the situation, is that the PGA Tour is about to clean house and Jay Monahan could potentially have his job jeopardized as well.
No, because, I mean, Jimmy was an ally, but it's clear that Jimmy Dunn thought that a deal was best for the PGA Tour. He doesn't talk Jay into starting communications with the Public Investment Fund early last year. It was in the spring of last year. And according to Jimmy, who testified before Senate, he talked Jay into at least having conversations with him. He's the one that led those negotiations that came up with the framework agreement, him and Ed Herlihy. So those two clearly want a deal. My understanding is they really understand what I just said. Like they understand that the game is not, that this is not sustainable, that the two sides have to come together again. Now you look at the other side of it, and this is the palace intrigue and the internal politics of it all. There are clearly those who are on the new enterprises board that don't feel that that's necessarily the case, that they can see a future without a deal. I don't particularly agree with that, but clearly there are those on the board. It's believed to be, no one knows this for sure, but it's believed to be some sort of combination of Tiger Woods, Patrick Cantlay, and Jordan Spieth, along with Jay Monahan, who are of the mindset that maybe we can go this alone. We don't have to have a deal with the PIF right now because we have the allies that are SSG, as you pointed out, $1.5 billion investment with the option to invest another $1.5 billion. I think what this is an indication of is that that belief is starting to be chipped away, that the idea that somehow the tour could make it work without a deal with PIF, it is that's just not doable. Because I wrote about this on Sunday in a roundabout kind of way, that the game is just better when they're all together. The game is better when Bryson is around and Brooks is around, and however it is you make the product come back together. And it's going to cause the entire game to completely rethink what professional golf looks like. I don't know that that's a bad thing.
And even if, as the New York Times reported, they did exchange offer sheets, that the negotiations are alive and well, that's only one piece of the puzzle, the financial aspect. I think even more pertinent to PGA Tour players is how do you incorporate them, the live players, back? If you incorporate them all, what sort of punishment is extracted from those who left the PGA Tour? Like, that's where the messiness entails. The financial aspect is very much just one part. As Rex mentioned, you can go to nbcsports.com/golf for more on that story, since it was, as we said, under the radar on Sunday night amid all these Xander Schauffele hoopla. Rex, it's Memorial Day weekend. You and I will be doing a podcast on Sunday night to recap Colonial. What do you have on the docket? And most particularly, what do you have on the grill?
It had been so long since I was home. So yesterday afternoon, I did an extravaganza, and it was kind of embarrassing because I essentially did it for myself, because the bunkmate doesn't particularly enjoy some of the things that I do on the grill. So I did wings, and I did like a hot Italian sausage, and I sauteed onions, and like I made this feast for essentially myself, and the dogs were staring at me and my wife was rolling her eyes because it had been so long since I'd been home. It's been a long time since I did pulled pork. Now, I'm not going to do that if the AC is not fixed, because as you can imagine, it's pretty hot in Florida right now, and I don't know if I want to spend all day outside smoking pork butt. and then come back inside and it's even hotter. So it'll depend. Everything depends on what happens with the AC. How about you? What do you got going on?
Yeah, it's supposed to be 90 degrees for the next week plus. Not sure why you're wearing a long sleeve hoodie.
It's comfortable.
Particularly when the temperature has to be approaching 80 degrees inside the Hoggard house.
The Grayson hoodie is very comfortable in the house.
Shout out Grayson. Shout out Frederica. We're going up to Reynolds, my in-laws' place. I will be doing, hopefully, ribs on Sunday to commemorate Memorial Day weekend. We'll be traveling on Monday, and so we would not be able to do it then, but I'm very much looking forward to that. I've not done ribs in a long time. I'll be doing it on what is essentially a drum smoker. It's the Weber Smoky Mountain. You can remove the baffle in the middle, and it essentially operates as yours does, as a drum smoker with some direct heat while still getting some separation between the meat and the fuel source. Looking forward to doing that. Should be a quick and easy cook, 3 to 4 hours, and oh so delicious. So that is my plan for Sunday. My wife is also playing her first round of golf at Reynolds Lake Coney.
Nice.
I'll have a full recap of that on Sunday night as well. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. In the meantime, mbcsports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. We'll be back, as mentioned, on Sunday for a recap of Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth's week at Colonial, plus anything else that comes up in the interim. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Emergency pod.